The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hi guys, you're listening to That's Mint, broadcasting across the top of the south on 104.8 Nelson Tasman, 107.2 Nelson CBD, 95.0 Eastern Golden Bay, 88.9 Blenheim, and streaming to the planet on freshfm.net and the Access Media. Right, so today everybody, we are going to talk a little bit about world peace and also some of the conflicts that are happening in our countries and around the world. My name is Avalon.
I'm Esther.
I'm Diksha.
I'm Amna.
And I'm Trisha.
Okay, and yeah, so we're going to have a little discussion. Esther.
Right, so I think the theme of this week that has been brought up a lot is corruption. And a lot of people don't really know what that means, because speaking like New Zealand context, we don't really have that a lot.
No.
Corruption is dishonesty in the government. It's bribery. It's taking away the money that is meant to be used for investments in like society.
Mm-hmm.
And that
and
includes
supporting the people and the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. That includes education, housing, as well as infrastructure as well.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, I had a lot of exposure to corruption, not just how it influences us, but also like behind the scenes, because my uncle was a councillor for the state of Rio de Janeiro, which is where I lived in Brazil. So I got to see a lot how it works and how normalized it is, which is terrible because it makes people lose their hopes in politics.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what causes a lot of rage.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to speak against that, which is what Trisha is going to talk about.
So yeah, so there's a protest going on right now in Nepal. And first of all, I would like to say it's not about social media ban, because that's what a lot of news has been talking about.
Yeah, and the BBC and everything, they've been discussing a lot about how it's like, or they've how has this happened? Is it the government that pushed that, or where did that kind of interpretation come from?
It was slowly, I have to admit, it was a bit about social media and like how they didn't get like free speech.
Because didn't they ban social media? Is that what happened initially that set everything off?
Yeah, and then there was a social media video about one of the prime minister's children, which was like nipple babies. And then that kind of like made all the Gen Z's mad and stuff.
Yeah. And then in the video, was it them showing off their wealth or like
flexing? It was showing out their wealth, and we were all confused, like, where did they get this money from and stuff? Is it from our tax and stuff?
And was this before or after the social media ban? People saw that?
That was during the social media ban.
Oh, okay. So nobody had social media except for the children of the politicians.
Yeah, something
right.
like that.
Okay.
So it was like a build-up of all those things.
Yeah, it was like a build-up.
Mm-hmm. Like a culmination.
Yeah, and then at first, a lot of people got furious about that.
Mm.
And so they went and fighted against politicians for like a better future.
And so this was a protest.
Yes, it was a protest against corruption, basically, and the Nemo babies.
Yep.
Mm.
And then Nepo babies.
Nepotism.
Yeah. Mm. And then first it was a peaceful protest.
Yeah. And who was protesting?
It was all the Gen Zs.
So young people.
Yeah, young people, because this has happened for a long time now, and the Gen Zs just got sick of it and they just wanted to speak up.
Yeah.
And like, since social media got banned, they felt like there was like no free speech for them.
Yeah, like no voice.
Yeah, no voice. So they wanted to speak up and they peacefully protested on, I think, September 8th.
Okay, so was that Tuesday for
us? Tuesday? Yeah, it was Tuesday for us, but Monday for them.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, very recently.
Yeah, very recently. And then the government decided to shoot students.
Yeah, because they were all in their uniforms. Right?
Yes, they were all in their uniform, and they decided to shoot students, and at least 20 of them died, which kind of created a big, like, rage.
A lot of rage and
stuff. And then, from what I know, they started getting mad, and they started burning, and started, like...
So the protesters then got upset and retaliated due to the fact that the police opened fire on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so the police started, like, throwing some stuff, like water bombs or whatever.
Okay. And, like, tear gas, I'm
assuming? Yeah, tear gas. And then the agency started picking those up and throwing it back at them.
Yeah.
And then there's also, they started shooting fire grenades. Fire, what's it called? Fire cannons?
Oh,
Is that the things you throw on the floor and then it just explodes?
Like a Molotov cocktail?
No, it's not explode. It's like...
Is it like...
Like they shoot it. It's like from a gun.
A rubber bullet?
Yeah, rubber bullet or something like that.
Yeah.
They shoot it that at the students at first. And then... So they... Oh, wait. I kind of messed up.
Okay, wait. No, it's okay.
So there's fire.
Yeah.
And then so they attacked the police. And then they retaliated.
The police retaliated?
Yeah, the police retaliated back. Mm-hmm. And then since that, on day two, they started burning down I think it was the politicians' homes.
Yeah.
They burned down all politicians' homes.
And this is still the young people.
Yeah,
and the Gentis.
Yeah, the Gentis try to like open the parliament through wired gates and stuff like that. Yeah. And then the police obviously try to stop them, but, like, they are really raged, so, like...
It's a lot of tension and a lot of anger. Yeah. Yeah, understandably so.
And then, so, after that, they started throwing lighters at the parliament and Supreme Court and stuff. Mm-hmm. So all of that went on fire.
Yeah.
And then on that same day, the Prime Minister decided to resign.
Okay. So he just stepped down.
He stepped down and tried to escape.
And yeah. Is it his wife who got burnt alive or is it the former prime minister?
I think, I actually am not sure about that.
I think that.
Okay, so from there, then Gen Z and the youth, they started setting fire to things, right? As a form of protest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the police retaliated back at them. And is that when they shot the students?
No.
Or was that prior to this?
That was prior to this.
Okay. That was at the protest with all the kids.
Yeah.
And am I correct to believe that the students were wearing their uniforms?
Yes. A lot of students were wearing their uniforms. And and then they shot.
And they shot them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was that kind of as things got more heated and more, like... As the protest became more violent, I suppose.
Yeah, that was more violent. And then...
That led to the open fire.
Yeah, that led to the open fire.
And I know that there were 19 or 20 casualties. Do you know how many were wounded?
I think at least 30 or 40.
Okay, all right. And where are you getting all this information, Tricia? Is it coming from... Because obviously, like you said, like even the BBC, they're kind of not necessarily spreading a false narrative, but... Their version of events is quite different to the thing that you and the other Nepalese girls are saying. What is that because this information is coming directly from your families
back
home?
Yes, this is mainly because they're coming directly from our family, our friends who are back in Nepal.
Okay.
And yeah.
Are your families living in... Is this all of this happening in Kathmandu?
Yes, all of this is happening in Kathmandu, the capital city.
And is that where your family are?
Yeah.
Are any of your family members involved in the protest or been affected by it?
Not really. I think they have been involved, but they're all the way in the back, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're kind of trying to stay out of it.
Yeah.
Mainly. I can imagine it's a really scary time for a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So...
Has this become, like... Are there two sides to this? Like, are there people who argue that... the protest should have never happened.
But no.
Is everyone?
Everyone on the agrees same? With it. Mm. All the older, so Gen millennial,
the millennials.
Yes, them. They actually wanted to protest, but they couldn't.
Oh, okay. Mm. And so that's why it ended up being the students.
Yeah, it ended up being the students because them.
Mm-hmm.
They were too scared to speak up.
Right, of course.
And so Gen Z, since we're very brave, I'll say, we decided to speak up for our family, our future, and our past.
Okay. Mm. Wow.
Wow.
So now what is happening over the past few days or even today? Do you know what's happened?
As of today, the Prime Minister has, after he resigned, he has escaped to another place in Nepal.
Okay.
So escaped Kathmandu, let's say. Oh, yeah. And right now we do not have any prime ministers or anything.
Yeah.
And the Gen Zs are cleaning up all their messes and stuff. Oh, okay. Because after they protested, they won.
Mm-hmm.
But there are opportunists.
How did they win?
They went after the prime minister resigned.
Okay, oh, so
and
that
all the politicians
was like their
that's a victory.
That's victory mm-hmm. for them okay. because now they know they can vote for another good person instead. Okay.
Yeah. So you were saying there are opportunists?
Yeah, opportunists. And those are 35-year-olds and above.
Okay, so much older people.
Yeah, not Gen Zs. Gen Zs has completely stopped after they won and started cleaning up the places.
Okay.
And, started rebuilding
mm-hmm.
how much they could.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then those people are releasing prisoners from jails.
Okay.
Like rapists.
Yeah.
Rapists and murderers and them.
Yeah.
And they're also vandalizing public properties.
Right. So mm-hmm. it's just chaos at the moment.
Yeah, it's a lot of chaos right
and
now.
And there's no one. Who are the... So the police, who are they answering to right now? There's just no one?
No one.
Okay.
The CID has actually told the police that they were in the wrong.
Okay.
And then some chaos went over there.
Yeah. So just right now, there's just no one.
No one.
Do you know if the military will step in at some point or... Will it have to be an international?
Right now, we don't know.
Okay.
But a lot of people are hoping that the mayor of Kathmandu
mm-hmm.
becomes the prime minister.
Okay.
And stuff.
Do you have any idea how that would happen? What that would look like?
Right now, I'm not sure.
Because you say that victory is having the prime minister being resigned.
Yeah.
But how good is democracy in Nepal? Like, how confident are you that you can just elect another prime minister?
Honestly, if I have to be honest, I'm not that confident.
Really?
Yeah, because there are a lot of politicians that can backstab you anytime, any minute. So I'm not confident, but it is what it is, honestly.
Yeah.
Do you think it's hard because Nepal is such a new democratic country?
Yeah, I think that as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, because you... operated under a monarchy, was it up until 2011? Am I correct?
2008.
2008. Yes, and then you became a democracy after that.
Yeah.
So it's still very, very new to your people.
Yeah.
Mm. And do you think that possibly has played a part in the corruption that came so quickly with that? Or would you say that this is just...
I think it's just 50-50, honestly.
Okay. Yeah. Corruption has always been embedded in... countries.
Yeah, like, it's always been embedded. And then,
Do
you think there are chances of Nepal going back to a monarchy after all the strikes that have happened?
Not sure at all.
Okay. Would there be anybody that would be, I guess, entitled to?
Like a dictatorship could happen?
No, I have no idea.
Mm, okay. What do you think would be, the ideal future for Nepal, in your opinion?
Someone who does not backstab us with our money, obviously.
So someone like a transparent government.
Yeah, a transparent government. And also someone who wants to look after our nation, our country, and, look after the people in our country.
Yeah.
Because due to this corruption, there's a lot of people who are moving out of our country.
Yeah.
So we would, want a prime minister that's fairly well, and, looks after our country, nation, our people.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
We are going to very quickly play a song. We have picked They Don't Care About Us by Michael Jackson. That was Esther's choice.
Yeah.
So hopefully you enjoy, and we will be back. Hi guys, welcome back. That was They Don't Really Care About Us by Michael Jackson. Previously, we spoke a little bit about the corruption in the protests and everything that's happening in Nepal at the moment. And I think with the current state of the world, it would be unfair to discuss corruption and political unrest and not address Palestine. Yes. And what's happening in Gaza at the moment. Mm. Amna,
yeah.
You specifically requested that you speak about this.
So I'll be talking about peace for the people in Palestine. And peace means safety and fairness for everyone. So it means that living without fear in your home and community. Mm-hmm. And also it's a chance to grow, learn and live with dignity.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's very powerful. It's important. I think peace is just like safety as well. Did you mention safety?
Yeah.
Mm. Being able to have confidence in... Mm-hmm. your everyday life, not constantly living in fear.
Yeah, it's a human right.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, waking up thinking you can do this.
Like
going to school, maybe going to work.
Mm. Yeah, not being worried about violence as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So for Palestine, peace have been not existing for over 75 years.
Yeah. Damn.
And since 1948, Palestinians have been denied a safe and free state to call their own. Mm. But people think that it all started from October 7, but it actually have been going on for years. And Gaza today is often described as the world's largest open-air prison because they're not allowed to go out or anyone to go in.
Mm.
And it's even hard for people to get aids and foods for the people in Palestine. So I think a few days ago there was a boat sent to Gaza.
Yeah.
Sending foods and aids.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to land in a few days maybe.
Okay, that's good.
Didn't they try that with the parachutes? But when the food got there, a bit of like the bread was moldy and...
Yeah, and it was kind of unfair because some people, not most of the people got to like...
Yeah, they can only send so much food.
Yeah.
And only it's like for a specific area because the whole Palestinian area is like affected. And
No, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And currently right now they're in a stage five like...
Famine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So nobody has any food?
No.
And no food, no water.
Yeah, and basically the children in Gaza is like starved.
And no people are dying of starvation.
Yeah, no one's really speaking
It's crazy to see how different countries have different dangerous things absolutely. And chaos.
Yeah.
And how fortunate we are in New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
We're really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But no one really speak up that much, even though they did. It's not really like...
Yeah.
It's like they're two-sided. They're not like...
supporting one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I think like... One of the interesting and kind of the worst things about what's happening in Palestine is I think it gets a lot of visibility. I think a lot of people in the world know what's happening and they know how bad it is. And yet we see so little action towards actually helping the Palestinians.
No speaking up.
I mean, even our own government refuses to acknowledge Palestine as a state. And like the countries that do acknowledge it, they're not doing like that.
That
doesn't really mean anything. Like it's not.
Yeah, I think for people who are acknowledging, I think they should try to do at least something not like say, oh, I support Palestine.
And then, actually do something about it.
Yeah, actually do something about
it. But I mean, even like the UN has done very minimal in the way of supporting the Palestinian people or protecting the Palestinian
people. Exactly.
Which is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
Especially as... I guess for us as youth, but also as people who do not have, you know, a lot of power, the only thing that we can really do is spread awareness. But once the awareness is out there, you know, it's kind of like, then what is
it? It's on them at this point.
We don't really have the power to do anything beyond share our voices and share awareness.
It's also unfortunate how there's people here in different countries other than Gaza who has family in Gaza and watching this and see how no one is like helping them and like nothing is being made.
Yeah, and feeling powerless as well.
Yeah.
And that goes for a lot of people whose family are in difficult situations too.
Yeah.
There's only so much that donations can do. Because they are helpful, but it's gotten to a point where you need real renovation.
And big changes to be made.
Yeah.
And speaking of big changes, Diksha, do you want to share a little bit about what you've been up to as well?
Yeah. So I went to Japan recently, beginning of August, to attend International Youth Peace Conference for the Future. It was in Hiroshima, a city so passionate about peace because they've had such a great history of the A-bomb dropping.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how it's so many countries are going through so many different struggles, like we talked about Nepal before and Gaza just now. What the biggest thing I learned going to the conference was peace is so different for each country.
Okay.
Because we had youth, about 56 youth from 16 different countries.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were talking about our cities and what peace is for us, peace for someone living in Laos in such a diverse city is people of different backgrounds living together happily. But it's for some cities, it's going nuclear free, making sure there are no nuclear wars like Hiroshima itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's something I really learned. And another thing I learned was that world peace isn't going to be an overnight change.
Yeah.
It's going to take decades and decades.
Yeah. It also takes time, and it also takes a lot of passion and a lot of hard work to have peace.
And a lot of resources too.
Yes, a lot of resources as well.
I think something us as young people, that we have a voice, we spread awareness as we were talking about before. I had the chance of listening to an A-bomb survivor testimony on the second day of my conference, and she's about 83 now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she didn't start sharing her story until she was 70.
Wow. Because of the trauma of the experience.
Because she was 12 when the bombing happened.
Yeah.
So she had lost her friends, her family, her everything.
Yeah.
And she was holding on to that trauma and was so scared to share it with other people, because every time she would bring that topic up, it would scare her off.
Right,
of course. That's the thing with everyone else as well. Whoever is in, like, whatever countries that's in chaos, they're scared as well.
Yeah.
They have a lot of trauma, which, like, they're scared to talk about.
And that's something that we as people living in a safe place could never even begin to understand as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Mm. Like, what they have been gone through. And
exactly.
Like,
yeah. No, it's incredibly hard. But that's really interesting, Diksha. And what was a lot said in terms of, like, I guess, like a future, or like what people have envisioned for the future, slightly how we, like, what we said earlier?
Yeah, I think something all of us wanted, the future for the world, is it's peaceful.
Yeah.
People of different backgrounds live together. And this biggest thing that all of us found in common was there's so much lack of knowledge in our citizens, in the world citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with little pieces of education.
Okay.
And we were looking at making a worldwide curriculum for peace, because I'll take the Hiroshima example. Someone sitting in Hiroshima would learn about the A-bomb dropping way differently than someone sitting in the United States.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we did look at making a world curriculum for people.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that we found out was there was so much lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
And there's such a big gap. And until we fill that gap, we won't be able to find world peace.
No, you can go ahead.
Okay. That's such a difficult thing to determine, though, in an international curriculum, because obviously history is subjective, you know, and the way that things happen will obviously be different to different people and their experiences.
Different perspectives.
Yeah. So it's going to be an incredibly challenging thing to come up with a version of history that everybody relates to or finds correct, yeah. you know? Like, obviously, if you were to look at German history, their version of events would be incredibly different to the way that we learn about yeah. the Second World War, or the Japanese learn about the Second yeah. World War. So
I think despite we have so many historical events that tell us that peace is very important for us so that we feel secure and then mm-hmm. we feel that we can do anything we want.
Yeah.
When we were talking about the worldwide curriculum, we were aware that it's such a hard job to do and mm-hmm. it's going to be so hard to make all the countries even follow that curriculum. How are we going to mm-hmm. build it? So what we were looking for is UN coming up with some principles of peace that are taught in every single country, okay. just like human rights. Mm. It's worldwide by the UN. Yeah. So something like that. So not a big full-fledged curriculum, but the UN having some principles that all countries follow to make sure that we can achieve world peace as soon as possible.
Okay.
And I also think that the lack of knowledge also comes from school, because schools don't really teach. Also, the lack of knowledge in school is kind of like something that we should talk about as well, because I feel like a lot of people don't know about their own histories and a lot of different countries' perspective yeah. of how it is. It's only one country and their perspective.
I agree with that.
And I think we should have like a subject in school that talks about everyone's discrimination and like everyone's perspective of the world and yeah. peace.
Well, because we have social studies in NCEA level 1 and NCEA level 2, which I believe are compulsory.
Yeah.
And
not
everywhere.
No,
not everywhere. Okay. And I do know that there is no curriculum for either of those classes.
Yeah.
So the teachers kind of have a lot of free will when it comes to the things that they choose to focus on.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, maybe if it were through social science.
Yeah.
That kind of generalized knowledge was taught as part of the curriculum.
Something I found really interesting that in mm-hmm. Japan, every single student has to do peace study all through their school.
Okay, mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of schools worldwide which meant for them peace study is mandatory and everyone has to learn them throughout their school.
Okay.
I think that's something really that our society could use as well, because we learn about our New Zealand history and we barely touch on the world history.
Yeah.
And we only learn it from our perspective and not other countries' perspective, yeah. which is really important for us as young people to have a point of view
mm-hmm.
on such big issues.
I agree. Okay. All right. Well, that's kind of all we've got time for, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
I hope you have a good week. And yeah.
Hashtag world peace.
Yes. Hashtag world peace.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.